everyone. Welcome back to Season 3, Episode 11 of Back to the Past, the Alternate History Podcast. And before I get started today, I wanted to introduce a very special guest we have with us, Nick W.
Hi, Nick and Rowan. I'm Nick Ward. I do my own podcast called Historical Hysteria, and I am so looking forward to talking your topic today.
Yeah, but Nick, basically, he breaks down the weird myths in history, and it's a really cool podcast. I would definitely suggest, if you guys enjoy listening to this one, listen to that one as well. But now I want to introduce my normal co-host, Nick A.
Hello.
But now let's get to the topic. What are the Chinese nationalists won the Civil War?
So before I get into the background, I just want to once again plug Nick Ward. I have to say, though, he has some very interesting myths. One you should definitely check out is 5 Myths About the American Revolution, which it's very popular mainly because of the fact that it's 5 popular myths that are just busted with actual facts from history. But let's get down to background. So before we get on to what actually would change in this scenario, we have to get a little bit of context. So at the end of World War II, as you know, that the Axis was defeated, and specifically I want to focus on the Japanese. So the Japanese had control over some of mainland China, specifically Manchuria. And however, due to a last-minute invasion by the Soviet Union in 1945, the Soviet Union was able to claim Manchuria, which they gave to the CCP, Chinese Communist Party. And if you know, the CCP becomes the modern-day People's Republic of China. However, there is also another party, the Kuomintang, who was actually the more dominant force in China throughout the 1920s, 1930s, and the first part of the 1940s, up until around 1948 and 1949. So I believe that this best would happen around, say, 1946, because the Kuomintang actually entered into southern Manchuria during that time period. In fact, conquered Harbin, which is actually was actually the most populous city in Manchuria during the time period. And so the main reason why, I would say, at least in my opinion, from what I've looked into, I would say that the main reason was because of U.S. foreign involvement. Now, don't get me wrong, corruption was a pretty big, important part of it. But it was mainly due to the foreign involvement of the United States, specifically George Marshall, who was the Secretary of State and also credited for the Marshall Plan in Europe. Specifically, George Marshall ordered Chiang Kai-shek to actually stop in southern Manchuria. And this is the reason why he stopped was mainly because of the fact that as the United States threatened to pull all military aid from the Kuomintang. And due to this scenario, unfortunately, the Kuomintang had to accept. And as you know, in later history, in 1949, the Kuomintang would be kicked out of China and would be sent to Taiwan, where it is now the Republic of Taiwan. So in this scenario, I believe that the Kuomintang would, in this scenario, I think that we would have to see the United States just simply not say stop there. However, we also have to put into the fact that the Soviet Union would have to get involved as well, because the United States and Britain, while they were kind of hesitant to get involved, the Soviet Union was much more interested, specifically in the region of Manchuria. So to start off, I think that in this scenario, I think we would still see a divided China, more so West China, East China, with the West China being ruled under Chiang Kai-shek and Eastern China ruled under Mao Zedong in this scenario. So how do you think this would turn out? And at least with the consolidation.
So I think this is such a good topic to discuss because it's so broad and awesome. And I went down such a rabbit hole researching this. I don't know how you guys contain yourself, but the way I kind of think it plays out is that the Kuomintang obviously have a massive problem with corruption. So like hypothetically, if they don't stop at Harbin and they seize control of the rest of Manchuria, because the Kuomintang are at a really strong position in 1945. They vastly outnumber the communists, and the U.S. are airlifting them into cities to help stop the spread of communism. But you have that massive corruption within the party, which so you see things like the requisitioning of banks, and it makes them very unpopular. So I think regardless of like what happens between them and the CCP and between them and the Soviet Union, you're going to see a big insurgency in China. Regardless, so say they push into Harbin, you're going to see Soviets moving troops towards the border, and you're also probably going to see Soviets, the Soviet Union, sending more forces to help the CCP, either through resources or through direct involvement. And I think the likely scenario within about 10 years is that Chiang Kai-shek manages to maintain control of the cities, and the CCP gets pushed out into rural China, and then possibly gets involved with the USSR closer. I think the US would be pulled into a more closer role helping the Kuomintang, and that then you would see like a very strong divide probably in the provinces of like Hubei, Hunan, Shanxi, and Manchuria, because these are sort of historical border provinces in China. There's lots of mountains, so you would see I wonder if they're develops a proxy war between nationalist China and communist China, sort of like a similar development to what happens in India between Pakistan and India. So you see, you know, just constant border clashes through the years, sort of rising and falling, plus with probably an insurgency within nationalist China. And I also wonder if the CCP winds up getting absorbed into the USSR just because it's in a less powerful position, because that was something that Khrushchev would push for under his and Stalin was sort of, they pushed for closer relationships with China with sort of the aim of eventually being absorbed into the same country.
You bring up a great point, Nick W, because, I mean, as you said, the CCP is definitely a lot weaker, so they're going to have to crumble to essentially the USSR, because they're kind of relying on the USSR for support, weapons and stuff. They can't really produce their own. But my issue is that I don't think either China, the CCP or the Kuomintang, would ever really be satisfied with a split China, because unlike North Korea and South Korea, where it was split by the Soviet Union and the United States, China's borders aren't being drawn by foreigners. So I think that they're just going to kind of fight each other until the other side's essentially dead. That's really where I think, because I don't think either side would agree to a ceasefire. I think they want that control. I don't think they're really gonna. And both of them are dictators, and both of them are aggressive. I mean, it's not like Chiang Kai-shek was an angel compared to Mao Zedong either, because he was as much of a dictator too. And when he went to Taiwan, there was mass roundups and arrests for potential traitors and potential spies. Overall, he's not really a good person compared to Mao Zedong. I mean, he's better, but that doesn't make him a good person still. So I think the way that both of their personalities are, where they're aggressive and they believe they're the right China, and we can still see this to this day between the Taiwan and the People's Republic of China claiming that they're actual China, I don't think they would really settle on the split China. I think they would fight for that one unified nation. And it would eventually go to the Kuomintang, because that's a scenario we're going for, and I think the U.S. would definitely get a lot more involved in it, but it would be a bloody war and a long war. And I don't think China would recover for it in at least 20 or 30 years, or even longer.
So yeah, so a few things before I go into my point. Nick brought up a great point about corruption. Corruption was a big problem for the Kuomintang, even when they went into Taiwan, and this was a problem throughout Chiang Kai-shek's reign. And you also brought up a good point specifically around the White Terror, which happened in Taiwan in our actual history, which basically was a purging of communists. So I actually like Nick's theory a little bit more, specifically with the split between the CCP up in the provinces that he mentioned and the rest of the Kuomintang. So I think that another important part about that is that I don't agree with Rohan's theorization of that, mainly because I don't think it would be a constant civil war. More so, I think it would be more of a guerrilla campaign. But I think we'd also see a much bigger of a white terror as well in this scenario. And along with that, I also want to, since we're talking about East China or West China, I think that another pretty big important part is what happens with the Korean War. Do you think that maybe the Chinese tensions begin to flare up as well, specifically between like the border tension between East China and West China? How do you think that would turn out? Do you think it's just a simple flare up, or do you think that East China would also get involved, similar to a scenario like the CCP actually did in modern history?
I'm really torn about what happens with the Korean War, just because I think the CCP would be in too weak a position to get involved. So unless the CCP sort of cooperated with Russia, I think you wind up with a position where Korea becomes unsalvageable. Because once the US forces reach the Yellow River, I think, the only thing that turns that around is hundreds of thousands of Chinese troops. I think if you don't have that sort of stranglehold on power that the CCP already have in 1950, you're not going to get enough soldiers in there to turn the tide around. So I wonder if that sparks conflict between the nationalists and the Soviets. Maybe the Soviets start pushing into Mongolia. South of Mongolia. Start sort of behaving more aggressively through Manchuria, and maybe start trying to reignite the border conflicts between East and West China. I don't know. Similarly, like with the Korean War, I sort of wonder, the nationalists might sort of push to like exert dominance over it, but I think the US would probably start to get wary of nationalist China, especially if they were stabilizing around this period, and would probably push for a strong counter regime in Korea.
So yeah, definitely one important thing is that you also, I think you also just to mention on to add on what you were saying about the nationalist Chinese being, the United States being wary of a nationalist China, is that Chiang Kai-shek wasn't a fan of the Americans to begin with. Specifically, he wasn't a fan of the American general who was in China during the time, which was Joseph Sitwell. And they had a bit of a rivalry almost, as Joseph Sitwell viewed him as almost like an idiot or a moron, per se. And Chiang Kai-shek wasn't also a fan of him as well. So I do like what you were saying specifically with nationalist China and the United States have not being butting heads with each other. Now, I don't think it would be more in terms of like a ideological battle. I think it'd be more so in terms of like a regional battle, between like China and the United States. And I do like what you're saying. So I think that that would be very interesting to see what would happen with Korea, specifically with influence battle between China and America. However, I think another important thing to mention would be that about what do you think would happen with the economy in this scenario? Because as we know in actual history, is that Taiwan was actually able to turn into such one of the Asian tigers, as they would be called today, as their economy is booming. And because of this, Taiwan was actually able to become, despite being such a small island, the 21st biggest economy in the world in 2020. Do you think that the economy would reform similar to how they did with Taiwan? Or do you think that that due to it having a bigger populace, do you think that it would be much more of a small home, much more of a harder task to pull off?
I think, first of all, Taiwan in our timeline wasn't really war-torn compared to the rest of China, because Taiwan was modernized by Japan. It was occupied by Japan, and it essentially has Japan to thank for this infrastructure, which helped jumpstart the economy. China did have industrialization from Japan, but it wasn't to the same extent to Taiwan. And it's not the Japanese fault. It's just China's a much larger country, and it's going to require a lot more investment to industrialize it to the same level and extent as Taiwan. And on top of that, China literally was just in a civil war. So you're going to have this infrastructure damage to begin with. So I don't think that the Chinese economy is going to really jumpstart to the same level as Taiwan, per se. But I think it will eventually outpace as they start spending more and more money on those repairs and more money on those factories and just the export economy. Because China is a boom house. It has plenty of natural resources. It has plenty of manpower. I mean, throughout history, we can see that China, if it wasn't an isolationist power, it was one of the great powers.
I completely agree with Rowan that Taiwan was far less war-torn. It was a really defensible position. I think, yeah, the nationalists, I think you're right. The nationalists are in a much worse position in sort of 1945 onward, even if they push the communists out, because a lot of damage in the country. And they're just not, it's like the nationalist government is just not a government that's going to push a lot of economic growth. But you do have that US investment, which, you know, a big part of Taiwan's economic miracle is that the US invests a huge amount of money into Taiwan over the next few decades to sort of bulk up their defenses. So the US is probably going to institute, depending on like the threat of the Soviets, they're probably going to institute a mini Marshall Plan to like pump investment into nationalist China. But I think that you probably wind up with a situation in which nationalist China appears a bit more like modern day India, in that there is like strong economic growth. You'll see a baby boom like in the US. You'll see a lot of economic growth, but it's going to be marred by civil strife. It's going to be marred by rebuilding. It's going to be marred by challenges to power, all manner of things. And you know, Europe and America's support for nationalist China is probably going to decline as China gets more powerful, just as they get more wary about like nationalist China, because like nationalist China is also going to be pushing for things like they're probably going to move for their own invasion of Tibet at this point, because Tibet's independent, but they're still claiming it. And they're probably going to start getting into border conflicts with the UK, because the nationalists also claim a bunch of land in like Myanmar and Thailand and Burma and India and all sorts of things. So yeah, I don't think it's a good situation for them. They're definitely not going to have the Taiwanese economic miracle.
Yeah, so you're definitely right, because nationalist China and the communist China both are definitely going to just kind of, they both claim their territory. And the nationalists, they don't really feel threatened as much by the United States, because the United States, I mean, it's kind of a joke, but the United States really, during the Cold War, as long as you say you're not communist, they'll give you money and guns to defend yourself. So the nationalists really didn't have the US to worry about. And the UK was a fading power in Asia, so they were and they would be probably more aggressive than the CCP was in our timeline.
So Nick is definitely correct about the Kuomintang definitely being in a worse position in China instead of Taiwan. And I think that he actually made a perfect comparison with modern day India with China. And the reason why I would agree with him on that is mainly because I believe in the analogy that the enemy of your enemy is your friend. And in this case, China, while not being the friend of the United States, is not going to also be an outright communist state that's allied with the United States and instead allied with the Soviet Union, like Maoist China was for the first bit before the Sino-Soviet split. So my question is actually, we're talking about a baby boom specifically. And I was just curious, as you know, in modern day geopolitics, China is about to hit into a demographic crisis as a result due to CCP policy surrounding specifically the one-child policy that was implemented around 1978, 1979. I don't have my years correct on that. I might be wrong about that. But do you think that they would hit maybe a similar demographic crisis as they're about to hit today, specifically with a lot of old people going into retirement while there's not enough of a working class, per se, in the modern Kuomintang, or no?
Yeah, I wonder if there's like two factors. I wonder if there's less of a baby boom, just because if half of the country is being controlled by a different government, you're obviously going to have slightly fewer resources, so less of a big family. I don't think the nationalists would push for a one-child policy, but I wonder if they instead use overpopulation. Instead, overpopulation becomes a reason to like push for expansionism. You could see Chiang Kai-shek, especially like towards the end of his life, or whoever sort of comes after him. Maybe states throughout history, when they've had too many people in them, have often sort of used just massive, endless wars to whittle down population surpluses. So you might see more conflicts with, especially the USSR, because that's where I reckon that the nationalists would direct most of their sort of expansionist aims would be sort of northward. I'm not happy with my answer about that, though, if I'm being honest. I feel like it requires a lot more research and thought.
So yeah, you definitely brought up a great point. And I actually like how you turned that situation around, specifically with the Kuomintang justifying more of a push into other, like to the CPC, to the CCP. I thought that was a very interesting push you took there. But one more thing before we go off, what do you think about the eventual democratization? Do you think that as a result of the CCP threat, do you think that would still, that the democratization would still allow, would still be, no, with the eventual, because eventually I believe that after Chiang Kai-shek would pass, Taiwan was eventually democratized by Chiang Kai-shek's son at first, and then later on, as you see today, is Taiwan's a pretty is pretty much a democratic nation as you would consider it nowadays. However, do you think that this eventual democratization would happen in China, maybe after Chiang Kai-shek dies, or do you think that wouldn't be possible with a much bigger country as China?
Well, we need to look at it this way, because by the time he died, we need to evaluate the state of the country, because obviously, if the state of the country was in this terrible, like, just terrible place, even worse than what Taiwan was after his death, if this country was like in economic poverty, really, I could see that his son really sees the only way to fix the country is by with an iron fist. I mean, although it's not a nice truth, the truth of the matter is dictators can technically get more done because they do it without having to go through a Senate, without having to go through a process. But I think if China is in somewhat of a recovering place, I definitely think democracy would come, because it's got to be like a way to show that, oh, we're not oppressive like the communists. It'd be definitely more of a propaganda thing. Like, because now it's polar opposites of the communists, because nationalists before, they were essentially the same thing as the communists, just not with a communist economic system, but they were still an authoritarian government. But now with this democratic system, they're also different, and not only is it propaganda boom, it can also be used to show their citizens that we've come a long way from beating those communists back west, and you can just see how we've grown. Now we are a democratic system like the rest of the West, and like the rest of the West, we're going to be prosperous with this democratic system. What do you think, Nick W?
I think it just occurs to me, there's a really interesting point here about, I don't know about the democratization. Obviously, if the Kuomintang managed to push the CCP back, they're going to have a big, they're going to get a lot of support from the West, which is going to help delay any sort of any potential democratization. But there's another question, which is a lot of people don't know this, but China actually in 1949 isn't a single party state. Between 1949 and 1956, China actually has seven parties, and it operates as like a mini multi-party democracy. And then in 53 or 56, I'm completely blanking on this, but I'm going to say 56. In 1956, Mao then dissolves the multi-party system and establishes the CCP as the sole party. So one of the people, like, because people always so heavily focus on the communist nationalist aspect, the other sort of rebel forces in China at the time get left out, but there are sort of small but quite significant bodies of rebel forces who operate within the CCP umbrella, who are like, they don't want a communist dictatorship. They're not communists. They're like supporters of democracy. So I wonder, do they retreat east with the communists in fear of the Kuomintang? And then maybe the Kuomintang sort of becomes more democratic to try and chisel away at the CCP's support? Or do they sort of move towards the Kuomintang once they see that the CCP is drawing towards the USSR? I think that would play a really important part in whatever democratization process came. But I think that the Kuomintang might stay a brutal one-party state well into like the 60s, 70s, maybe even the 80s, and then only start reforming sort of as the USSR starts to decline, once sort of support starts getting pulled out of it.
Yeah, you bring up an excellent point, because it really does depend on how the situation and how the economy is doing and how the neighbors are. But anyway, we've been rambling on for a bit, and I wanted to end this episode by thanking you, Nick W., for coming on and joining us. It's an amazing...
Oh, it's been my pleasure. I've had so much fun talking about this.
Thank you again, and if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review, because it helps people like you find our podcast. We even made a link so that way it's easier for you guys to review. It's called ratethispodcast.com/althistory. That'll automatically take you to iTunes or Podchaser, where you can review it. And make sure to follow us on our socials at BackToThePastP1. And make sure to check out Nick W's podcast. It's going to be in the description, Historical Hysteria. It's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. And have a great rest of your day.